to the Purpose Podcast. Welcome to the Purpose Podcast.
Welcome to episode 32 of the Purpose Podcast. This is your host, Ted Sarvatta. This is the show where we encourage you, the entrepreneur, to live your business and your life filled with purpose. And we provide you the tools and techniques and tips that you can do to make that into a day-to-day reality. My friend Norbert passed on an interesting podcast from the HBR IdeaCast called Are You the Real You in the Office? And it references an article in HBR called Making Business Personal. And I just want to read the first paragraph. To the extent that we ourselves are only beginning to appreciate, most people at work, even in high-performing organizations, divert considerable energy every day to a second job that no one has hired them to do, preserving their reputations, putting their best selves forward, and hiding their inadequacies from others and themselves. We believe this is the single biggest cause of wasted resources in nearly every company today. So why do I bring that up today? I bring that up because my work is about freeing up entrepreneurs for greater impact. I believe strongly that the way that we make the most impact is by asking ourselves, who are you? Who am I? Then you go be that when you get the answer to that question. You may not have the answer today, you know, the full answer, but the more you ask that question and the more you take actions to align your business and your life with who you really are, then the greater impact you have by definition. So what is this article all about? I mean, as you are a business leader and you think about the people in your organization, are they allowed to be themselves? One pass through this. So you may be familiar with StrengthsFinder. This is the Gallup organization over years and years and years has asked questions about people's strengths. And for them, strengths mean not just what you do well, but what do you do well that when you're done with a day of doing it, you have more energy than you had at the beginning of the day? That's a real strength. Otherwise, it could be something you're good at, but if you left drained, then it's not a strength. So, you know, I've used StrengthsFinder with clients over the years. In fact, recently did a quarterly session with one of my clients, and it was a really fascinating conversation. This is a highly functional team. This is a team that works really well together. This is a team where one of the members of the team, seeing that another member had an analytic strength where she did not, she said to herself, wow, that's great. That's why I take, you know, when I have 10 amazing ideas, you know, before breakfast and I bring them to you, what I'm looking for is you to analyze those ideas and tell me which 9 of them I should drop and which one we can go pursue. The analytic person was feeling bad about that. I'm sorry I shoot down all your ideas. The idea person was thinking, wow, this is great. I actually get to have all these ideas and I don't need to worry about the analytic part of it because I've got a person like that on my team. So that's one level of this idea of taking off those masks at work. There's a couple of other books that are important and I may have mentioned them on previous podcasts, but I want to tie them in here together because I think they're really relevant for this conversation. In this particular HBR article, they call them deliberately developmental organizations. And I don't know if that jargon really matters. They only found 2 companies that they really studied. You know, they found maybe 20 that fit a definition of companies that are really developing their people. But the details I don't think are that important because it's not as if this is a movement and they, you know, they have a particular method that you can follow. That's really not the point. But the point is, think about the book Freak Factor. So Freak Factor is really about individuals and it's about pursuing what really makes you you, not trying to shore up the weaknesses that you've got. And really that's what StrengthsFinder is all about too. It's about looking at your strengths and putting you in the right positions within a team in order to make the whole greater than the sum of its parts. So Freak Factor really takes the position that if you look at yourself and you look at your career and you look at, you know, what you're really good at, and it's kind of the same idea of the StrengthsFinder, then you can find your way to a career where you don't have to give up those pieces of yourself that might be those rough edges or whatever. I mean, a lot of entrepreneurs, many of you in this audience may have found yourselves unemployable because you just can't stand just doing what you're told or doing what the boss thinks you should do or doing what came before. You have something bigger in mind. So that's a Freak Factor kind of a thing, and maybe even a StrengthsFinder thing. There's some strength in you that doesn't allow you to just work a traditional job. You've got to go out there and make some kind of an impact, even if there is, you know, lack of security in that, or there's You know, but there's something exciting. There's something that matters to you about building your business that way. So another book is Different by Young Mei Moon. And this is sort of the same concept of Freak Factor, except it's applied to a business as a whole. This is a Harvard Business School professor, Young Mei Moon, studied businesses and found that there are businesses like IKEA and Mini Cooper that really do manage to differentiate. And in fact, this connects to the Blue Ocean Strategy idea, the idea that you don't just compete in a red ocean where, you know, by taking something away from your competitor, that's the only way you gain. A Blue Ocean Strategy is we create something brand new and therefore we have no competitors. So in this world of a deliberately developmental organization or Freak Factor or Different or the Blue Ocean Strategy, I really believe this, that we really don't have competitors. What we have is relationships and we're able to meet certain needs and everybody is unique. So we can all be the best in the world if we define our business in the right way. And then we attract the people that we should be serving and we repel those that, you know, we're not the best to serve. So I want you to think about that for your business. And we're going to transition now into an interview with Sue Migdahl. I asked Sue to be on the show because she really knows who she is and she knows what her business is all about. And so I think it really fits the Freak Factor and the Different really well. And she'll tell us about her purpose right now on the interview. I'll hit you back at the end. It is my great pleasure to welcome Sue Migdahl to the Purpose Podcast this morning. Sue is president of DHM Research. And for nearly 20 years, she has worked on thousands of projects to improve communities. Specifically, she's interested in smart policies around a lot of different areas, transportation, community planning, renewable energy, education, and health reform. And we'll have her tell us more about all that. Well, one thing I find really interesting about her is that periodically she'll teach voting and policy to what she calls the toughest and scariest audience, fifth graders. Welcome, Sue.
Thanks, Ted.
I'm really glad to have you on the show. Could you tell us, first of all, what is DHM all about? And tell us a little bit about that work that you do.
You just did a great intro. DHM Research, we provide data to community leaders and organizations across the country for them to make better decisions on issues that matter to people, like education, what do voters think about K-12 schools, and are they going to pay additional taxes to support that new school facility or fund teachers, additional teachers in the classroom? What do they want to do about hydropower and renewable energy in the area? And so those are the kinds of issues that we work on, and ultimately we hope that the data will reach policy leaders or officials within government or executive level teams within companies to make better decisions.
Well, I imagine if I'm an elected official, there's a lot of different ways that I can, you know, seek input from my constituents. I mean, I can have a town hall meeting, or I can ask people to write in and tell me what they think. What's really the benefit for our elected officials of using research that you might provide?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, a lot of research, people consider it research when they get a group of people around the table, but the kind of research that that I'm talking about is really valid research. So getting a cross-section of the community, making sure that it's representative. So we really look at buckets, demographic buckets, and make sure that we fill gender and we fill age buckets. If I were to go out and do a study, it would actually be skewed older and skewed more women because they tend to be the people who participate. They're nice enough to get on the phone or answer our questions when we ask them on the sidewalk or in front of the grocery store. And the kind of research we do, because we want it to be representative of the community, we really have to be careful about the types of people demographically that we can fill those buckets into.
So when I think about research and I think about all kinds of research, human research seems more complicated in many ways than, you know, sort of in the lab scientific research. But I really sometimes get confused about how can we ask so few people and expect that that's really going to be representative of the whole? Can you tell us more about how that works?
Sure. Yeah. Even nationally, it may surprise people that we have, hundreds of millions of people across the country, that having a sample size of 1,000 will give us a good read on people's opinions. And you know, not to get too technical or scientific, it just comes down to, if you were to conduct that study over and over again, and using simple math, let's look at 100 times, 95% of the time, you'll wind up getting very similar answers. And so that's really the math behind that. We want to try and get within that 95%. So you'll see studies where it'll say there's a 5% margin of error. So basically, it's saying that 95% of the time you'll have responses that are plus or minus within that 5 percentage points.
I'm pretty good at math, but statistics is really not my forte. So that's why I'm asking some of these questions. You know, because I read these studies, right? I read the newspaper or whatever, and it'll say, you know, we surveyed 1,000 people around the country, and it's really confusing. But that, I mean, it's helpful to know that the math does work out, and that. That's one of the reasons why I would want to use DHM, because you know the math and you know how that works, and you can give me a sample that's, when we say random, it's not actually random, right? It's you're somehow getting people in all those buckets. That's,
yeah,
I guess that's another, yeah, confusing too. Well, what does random mean?
The randomness in today's world really is just making sure you don't go to the same people. And so we contact people in a random fashion, in a random order. So we're going through a list and calling every 10th number versus only calling our friends, right? Or people who will talk to us on the phone. And we're very lucky at DHM because the issues that we work on, people care about them. People care about and want to comment about the health of their community or what's happening to the quality of their water and air, and whether people taxes should go towards public transit or additional roads and highways. So those are issues that people will talk to us about. We're not testing, the latest soda or crispy chicken or potato chips. So I think those are a little bit harder to get people to spend 10 minutes talking about.
Yeah. So Sue, you've been at this for quite a while. You've been, you know, many years in this research field and really interested in smart policy. How did you get into that originally?
Well, for one, I love my community, and two, I've always been good with numbers, and the job that I have, the company that I run, works with those two really well. And it really just comes down to finding a spot that just fit my personality style and my skill set. I'm a huge believer in working within our strengths. Early in my career, I had a couple jobs where I worked within Fortune 500 companies where a few of my weaknesses really showed. And I struggled with that and try to work and overcome that and wind up spending a lot of time and making myself, I think, feel worse for it. So those are lessons in my 20s that I did not have to and didn't want to continue pursuing in my career.
As I was preparing for the podcast, I ran across a blog post by Kristen Luck where she talked about a conversation that she had with you about you going to speak to some, I think it was women entrepreneurs, and she expected you to be talking about successes, but you were actually going to talk about failures in your career. You know, I bring that up now because you talk about being in these jobs that didn't match your personality and your skills. Can you tell us more about either, you know, your own personal failures or what we can learn from failure?
Yeah, and I adore Kristen Luck. She took our conversation and then wrote a post, and then I think spoke on it a little bit more herself. So we're creating this little trend, and I hope it continues. Originally, it's interesting, they asked me to talk about excellence in leadership.
Oh.
And so I gave them a title back to the organizers, and I titled it, I think it was something like, I effed up, right? And they didn't particularly like that title. Not sure why.
Right.
So instead they changed it to challenges of excellence in leadership. So I went in and I actually put a different title up on my screen. And I wanted everyone to know that when they were coming in to listen to someone who had been successful in their business, that it wasn't all happy stories along the way. And I struggled a lot within the first 10 years having young children, managing a household and a business and family and marriage. And during that time, personally, I also had struggles within my family with my brother having been in a terrible motorcycle accident and being paralyzed.
Ugh.
And for me, being part of the care giver and support system for him while I was doing everything else with, you know, two young children under the age of four. So all of that, I think, makes every one of us stronger. We all go through struggles. I don't think it's necessarily any one person. However, though, if I didn't have purpose and if I didn't have my job be as stable as it was and the company something that I believed in, then I think things would have seemed more dire than it really needed to be. And so I was very fortunate at the time to, you know, have a support structure around me, whether it was within my business partners or the client base that I had, and of course my friends and family, to where I can take on some of that stress.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us more about your purpose? You know, you spoke to purpose and having a real clear purpose. What is your purpose, or what was your purpose at the time?
My purpose continues to be about making an impact.
Uh-huh.
And in the work that I do specifically, you know, we conduct opinion research. Some people may consider it polling or market research, but really we're looking at the values and beliefs of average people. So assessing their opinions. And even though we're doing that, we're really about making an impact in our community. We're taking the values of the community and making sure that the right people at the right time are hearing their opinions and their perspective, getting their voices heard. And whether it's in front of the governor or the legislature and the political process, or in front of an executive team within a private business to invest their charitable dollars in schools, or it may be in front of nonprofits and foundations on how to get messaging out around parenting and the support around reading and you know, early education values. So we're taking numbers, you know, in the most simple sense, and data, and converting it to making better decisions and smarter policies that will have an impact in our communities.
Wow. So I'm curious about this idea of values and community values. It seems like, you know, every community sort of has its own set of values, the things that are really important to it. So does this process of exposing or, you know, holding up community values, does it work for better policies no matter what the community values are?
You know what's fascinating? And we did this study called the Oregon Values and Belief Study.
Yeah.
And we did it the past 30 years, so in 1992, 2002, and 2013.
Okay.
Looking at every decade, what are the values of Oregonians? And we did, you know, Oregon because we are headquartered here in Portland, Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
And we found that the values from 30 years ago to today are very similar. So we wouldn't expect that values are going to change. But there are some trends in terms of how people value public services and where their taxes go, or how they might value the impact on greenhouse gas emissions into our climate, or where the priorities might need to be on where our time is spent. And so, you know, the values of family and the values around how people might view the environment might be pretty consistent. And we find that to be the case from Portland to, you know, the eastern parts of the state where, you know, it's a more rural community. And I'll give another example. So in Alaska, we worked on a project to assess how Alaskans' connection to salmon really impacts that state. And salmon, to average Alaskans, it's not just a fish. It's a source of pride. It's part of their culture. It's a way of life. Some people make their entire livelihood through salmon. And it's just a positive connected value of, you know, of an icon like salmon to Alaskans. So really the kind of work that we do, it really just trickles down to average people.
Wow, that's cool. So going back to your purpose here for a moment, purpose of making an impact, what difference does that purpose make in your day-to-day or long-term decisions in the business and or in your personal life? Where does that purpose play out sort of on the ground? Brass tacks.
purpose helps me to wake up early in the morning, and get the job done. It helps me to stay up late at night when I need to reach a deadline or be there for my staff in reviewing various documents or providing input. It, you know, helps me to put in those weekends. And when I'm on vacation on occasion, when I might need to participate, I think, in something that's work-related, I think purpose really drives me in how I spend my time. And I see that in my staff as well. When we have major deadlines and it's really stressful in the office, and other people on the team also have major deadlines, purpose really comes in when, you know, somebody says, you know, my plate is full, but I've got this block and I'm going to help my teammate. Because part of the purpose for them is being able to do interesting work and have the work maintain a certain level of quality. And we all share that value. So it not only helps me to wake up, but it also, I can see, it helps my team to stay engaged as well.
Wow. Excellent. Excellent. So, Sue, we're getting close to the end of our time here together. Could you share with people how do they find you and DHM on the web?
At dhmresearch.com.
Okay.
So www.dhmresearch.com.
Okay.
And they can check us out there.
Okay. Very good. I will link that up in the show notes underneath this this episode at the Purpose Podcast. So as you know, my last question for you, Sue, is just thinking about your life, thinking about your business, and thinking about purpose, what are your last words for entrepreneurs out there?
One of the most valuable lessons that I've learned is having a consistent rhythm with our team meetings. And at one of those meetings, it was an offsite, we spent some time really thinking about our values, and we did two simple exercises. One was I asked everyone to just list at least two or three things that makes them happy about their work. And then we made a list of everybody's comments and narrowed it down among all of us to five, because there were, of course, a lot of repeats. And out of those five, we were able to then identify what's our number one kind of core value, what's our North Star, our guiding star.
Yeah.
And for our team, it was interesting work. And so once everyone recognized that that was an agreed-upon value for our core team, it made making decisions about the kind of work we pursue, what we might turn down, where we might start to focus for new work. Everyone then had a specific purpose to go toward.
Excellent.
And I would encourage all business owners to do some exercise like that.
Okay. Very good. That's a great exercise. And you actually shared that with me several months ago. And then I've used that with a couple of other businesses, that exercise of taking five and prioritizing down to one. And it's been really impactful each time. So thank you for sharing that again with our Purpose Podcast audience.
Great. Thanks, Ted.
Yeah. Thanks so much for being on the show. I really appreciate you taking the time to be with us. Thank you for being here.
I'm happy to. We'll talk to you soon.
Wow, that was cool. It never ceases to amaze me how somebody with a business that doesn't necessarily seem purpose-driven, when you dig down and you get at it, you find out how inspiring it really is. I mean, who would think that a survey company, a research company, can really make a difference in communities? And yet, it makes perfect sense the way that Sue describes it, that we're talking about a community has values. And when you expose those values and when you publish those values and when you make sure the decision makers are tapped into those values, then decisions can be made in a better way. I think that is just super cool. So I want to shift gears a little bit here at the end of the show and share with you about a new workshop I'm putting together for June 12th in Detroit. I am offering a workshop. So June 12th in Detroit, I'm offering a workshop which I'm tentatively calling Purpose as Growth Driver for Visionary CEOs. And I'm just getting started in how to describe what this is that I'm doing. So, you know, you may know that I have offered Rockefeller Habits workshops in the past, and I'll still continue to do that in the future. But the one piece of the Rockefeller Habits which makes the most sense to me as an entry point is, of course, purpose. And here we are on the Purpose Podcast. It just makes sense that I would offer a workshop that's specifically centered around purpose. And so what I'm talking about working on is purpose, values, and then people. It's when I think about core purpose, you know, we ask some questions. Why does your company exist? What is your North Star? And so in the workshop, if you're crystal clear about your purpose coming in, then what we'll be doing is taking the expression of that purpose to the next level. If you're not crystal clear about your purpose, then we'll be working on it together in workshop format. Same thing is true for core values. If you're super crystal clear on your core values, then what we'll do is take your implementation of those core values to the next level. If you're not crystal clear on what they are, then we'll be working on that. We'll be developing them together. And then for people, what we'll be doing is we'll take those core purpose and core values, and we'll say, how does the expression of your core purpose and your core values result in you having the top talent possible? You know, given the money that you're going to spend on your salaries, you should be able to get, you know, the 90th percentile of productivity for people in that job. So we're going to be working on that. How can you identify, hire, and retain A performers who accelerate your growth? Really thinking about that from the perspective of purpose and values. So I'd love your thoughts on that. If you'd like to see the draft invitation as I've written so far, you can go to purposegrowth.eventbrite.com, and I will love to hear from you. My email is ted@purposepodcast.com. You can let me know what you think of the invitation, the price point, the framing, the value proposition, you know, all those kinds of things. I'd love to hear your feedback. And if you have any questions about the workshop, I'd love to hear that too. All right. So until next time, everybody go out there and live your purpose. It really makes a difference in the world. And I so value who you are. And thank you for the difference that you make out there.